Welcome back to the YouTube home for BamaOnline.com. Travis Schreier, senior analyst for BOL, alongside site publisher Tim Watts. It is a Thursday, February the 15th, 2024, the day after Valentine's Day, Tim. And I certainly trust that you treated Mrs. Watts to a fantastic evening, a romantic candlelit dinner, a bouquet of no less than two dozen roses, couple of three boxes of chocolate. I'm sure I'm right on all this, right?
That was a good episode for us to do hot, cold, cold, hot, hot, cold, 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 cold. I mean, we've been married so long. Her birthday's right around Valentine's Day. I mean, it's all kind of blended for us, so.
She kind of got the, like I did with the birthday. Birthday's 2 days after Christmas, you know, so I get the old two-for-one treatment.
Absolutely.
Still do to this day. Didn't handle that so well as a kid, but no. I've gotten better with maturity. I like to think we had a nice evening. You know, we went to a favorite restaurant. They had one of these price fix menus, you know, where you have to go all in.
Yeah, that's
and they hammer you pretty good, Tim.
But that's usually, I've never really had a bad price fix menu.
Yeah.
They nail it. They get it right. That's why they're able to do it. I mean, we've seen a lot of those in places like New York. I don't really prefer that. I like to, you know, basically choose my own food. But we've had good experiences with that. But for us, it was basically just watching TV, planning our trip in May, you know, looking at other stuff, what we might do at spring break. When you're married long enough, the flower and roses are more about, hey, buy me an outfit for Spain. So
there you go. There you go. We had a braised short rib. They had three options for the entree. You could get a short rib, you could get a ahi tuna, or tofu, Tim. What kind of option is that for an entree?
That's not an option.
I went with the short rib. They can't just do whipped potatoes with the short rib. You know, it's got to be whipped parsnips. Why can't they just do the potatoes? Why does it have to be parsnips? Is that how they get the extra 30, 40 bucks out of you for the meal, I guess, by jazzing it up, prettying it up with parsnips, which, by the way, they tasted pretty much like whipped potatoes. Can I just have my whipped potatoes, Tim?
Yeah, I would think, you know, simple for me is better. I never understood some of the green garnish on top of my meal. It's just like tossed on. Like, you know, somebody had to go cut that up and do a little work. Not sure it was needed. I pick it off. Hello, Steve Bama.
Afro Man Davis checking in as well. David Powell. Yeah, you've never struck me as a parsley guy. All of our years of sort of working together and interacting.
I mean, it's probably great. I would never know. You know, there's just things. I mean, it takes me, there's only so many things I can try each decade. Carrot cake, hog to my 40s. Mm-hmm. David Powell, carrot cake, hog to my 40s. Found out I liked it. Found out in my 50s, I like a good key lime pie. I didn't realize some of them just suck. Some of them are really good. You know,
I haven't come around to key lime pie totally, but the wife does these like lemon bites that are like a lemon custard that are really, really good. I've come around to the lemon sort of desserts. I used to be a no-go on both of those, but we got a lot. What's that?
That lemon icebox dessert.
My grandparents, my late grandparents, man, they love that.
That owns me. All right, let's get into it.
You want to get into this? We got plenty to talk about on the program today, as you might expect.
Thank y'all for the mailbag questions. That thing has taken off. You guys do a terrific job of real questions and discussion. So we certainly appreciate that.
Yeah, we're going to get to that coming up in just a little bit. We are topic heavy, as you might expect, as we typically are here. Let's start with the coaching staff, Tim, because that's obviously been on the minds of Alabama fans everywhere. Earlier in the week, it became apparent that the offensive coordinator position with Ryan Grubb staying in the Pacific Northwest with the Seattle Seahawks, also Scott Huff as an extension of that situation as the offensive line coach, that Nick Sheridan was trending heavily in that direction to become the next offensive coordinator under Kalen DeBoer. Sheridan, with extensive coordinator experience in the past, he's also worked with quarterbacks. He's a former quarterback himself. I know you posed the question when we were on earlier in the week with Jimmy Stein. What is the issue that maybe some Alabama fans would have with Nick Sheridan if, in fact, he were next up?
I just don't think a lot of them are familiar. I mean, you always want, you know, you want Bill Walsh, right, to come out of retirement. You know what I mean? You see, Bama fans have loved the – and you got to admit, I mean, they've had some crazy names sitting in that back office. I mean, Steve Sarkisian, Lane Kiffin, Billy Napier, those are head coaches in the SEC that were just sitting in the back. You know, so they can see. I mean, I've seen some, and hopefully they were kidding. We're talking about Bill Belichick coming on as an analyst, even though Saban's obviously gone. So they got a high standard for the coaches. But I think this is just a situation, and I think it's human nature that if you're not familiar with it, you don't like it. I mean, I've seen this several times. I've made several examples. Matt Olson, for the Braves fans, on the BOL roundtable, the Alabama Braves fans, got Matt Olson, an all-star Gold Glover, hit stingers, and they lost their mind. And
it's not Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what it is. Austin Mack, absolutely. I've never seen anybody go, who's Austin Mack? He's terrible. What are you doing? I mean, I don't know how. Who is he? And I hate him. There's got to be a comma, pause. There's got to be something in there to get to that. So I think with Sheridan, I mean, you look, he was fired in Indiana. I think the smart people will do a little bit more research. And I mean, first of all, you got to start with Kalen DeBoer. It's his offense. He's not sitting there just walking in and saying, hey, guys, what are we doing Saturday? Y'all got a good idea? I mean, he's involved with the play calling, the game planning. It's his game. That's his game. So everything's going through him. Very similar, and we've discussed this before. I've talked to a lot of coaches, several that have been on staff with him, who said Kalen is very involved. He's going to step in. He overrides a call. I mean, I don't think he, like, brags about that because it sort of takes away the offensive coordinator's authority. But if he doesn't like the third or fourth down call, he'll change the call. And I had one coach who was on staff with him in Indiana tell me that was very fairly frequent where he would override that with the new staffs at Washington and Fresno, he would override a call, change it to what he liked. So I think with Sheridan, you know, you look back and I've talked to people. His first year, they were fine. They were like 6-1, lost to Ohio State 42-35, had over 500 yards of offense, I think. Very, very productive that year. Now, the second year he was offensive coordinator, and again, this goes down to people that were on staff with him in Indiana. It was a mess from every level. It was a mess. It started with, I think he played 4 quarterbacks that year, so he lost. He lost Penix, who obviously was fantastic. He lost Tuttle, who was his backup, who's supposedly pretty good. I don't know him that well. And then he had to end up playing just a smorgasbord of quarterbacks. Also, he had guys on the offensive staff that wanted to be the offensive coordinator. You had a run-heavy guy, which is naturally, and Mike Hart, who was a really good running back at Michigan. You know, that's, you know, the good running backs are always run the damn ball. And then they had a guy that wanted to pass more. So it was just a bad situation. Nick Sheridan was let go. But what did they do the next 2 years? Nothing. They won 3 games and 4 games. I don't think the problem was Sheridan. Also, I think you go to the fact, if you agree that Kalen DeBoer, which all college coaches have said, he's a really smart offensive guy. He's the mastermind behind it. He keeps hiring Nick Sheridan. So you got to assume Nick Sheridan knows a little bit about offense, or Kalen DeBoer wouldn't hire him.
The quarterback is everything, even in college football these days. And you talk about the 2021 season and then 2022, 2023, you can just sort of back up and see the path that Michael Penix took through those years for more on, you know, how you're tethered to the quarterback position. And when you think about Alabama moving forward with Jalen Milroe, with Ty Simpson, with Dylan Lonergan, Austin Mack, who, by the way, if you're panicking about Ryan Grubb moving on to the NFL, then you can't really panic about Austin Mack, in my opinion, because Ryan Grubb is a guy who signed off on Austin Mack coming to Alabama, which sort of turned your quarterback room upside down a little bit, at least in terms of Julian Sain moving on to Ohio State. So can't have it both ways, although I know that won't slow down some folks. These titles becoming official here in the last day or so, I guess no surprise, things you had been hearing, we had been hearing in regards to Freddie Roach, Robert Gillespie, a couple of holdovers from the Nick Saban staff, and important ones in that.
Yeah, I don't know what all the titles mean. You know, I don't know exactly if it changes their responsibilities. I'm serious. I have no idea how I'm going to dig into that, but I have no idea if the responsibilities change. I'm sure they are. I also think it's a little bit of a way to get you more money, to reward you for the job you did. I mean, obviously, those two staying on staff were a big part of keeping the roster that remains. And I'm regardless of what anybody says, that's a top five roster in the country. Has a few holes, obviously, but it's a top five roster in the country. So Freddie Roach did a lot of work there. Robert Gillespie did a lot of work there. Also, they're really good recruiters. So, I mean, when you look at just the surface level, Robert Gillespie has a huge part of Florida, and Freddie Roach has a huge part of the state of Alabama. So we know their responsibilities from that, you know, coach running backs, coach defensive line. But what is there anything additional? If there is, I don't know. I don't know yet.
Yeah, it's important as we think about Kalen DeBoer coming in from out west as a recruiter with a handful of his assistant coaches that he brought along, to think about Freddie Roach and Rob Gillespie as recruiters. But again, as you pointed out, roster retention was first and foremost. It was paramount after the coaching change because your roster was exposed for that month to the transfer portal. So when you think about it in terms of who you kept and then who you'll continue to be able to recruit with guys like Roach and Gillespie, and also some support staff people that don't get enough love that were a big part of the retention and now the recruiting under DeBoer moving forward, I think we're just in an era too, Tim, where we're going to see more co's when it comes to co-defensive, co-offensive coordinators, associate head coaches, assistant head coaches. And a lot of times I think that's attributable to money, to salary, to being able to get people paid what you need to pay them. But also for these folks, it's about the next step. You know, I'm a position coach, but I ultimately want to ascend to a coordinator role and or a head coach role. You know, there sort of needs to be that gradual step up, whether it's semantics or not, in the eyes of a lot of people that come with these titles, Tim.
Yeah, and I don't know the difference between associate and assistant head coach. And, you know, I mean, you know what's kind of funny to me is I think under Saban, a lot of fans just didn't cover or follow a lot of the little things that went on, and now they're magnified. But, I mean, Hallman Wiggins was associate or assistant head coach as well. Nobody really seemed to discuss that until this happened with Robert Gillespie and Freddie Roach, the titles. I also saw the message board where they and I had several people ask me about this, and I was surprised. They were kind of like, I don't remember Saban ever taking time off in February. And I was like, what the hell are y'all talking about? 17 years, they took the Thursday after National Signing Day off and came back on Tuesday. So that was just like, oh, now Kalen's lax. They're taking off in February. I was like, no, Nick Saban. Not only that, Kalen DeBoer had him come back on Monday, and Nick Saban had him come back on Tuesday. So Kalen DeBoer might be a little bit more of a push him guy. No, I'm just kidding on that. But they, yeah, it's like we just forgot. So all these titles, all these support staff, there's always been a big support staff. There just never was a big deal made about it. So I get it. The excitement going through the new titles, the roles, but you're dead right about the support staff. That support staff was huge. It's always been huge. We didn't talk about it nearly enough under Nick Saban, because you had Nick Saban, you had your safety blanket, but we should have been talking, but you know, more about those people, because they were huge. They were huge in everything that's done. The graphic people, those edits, those kids look forward to it. The commitment videos, all that stuff's a huge part of college sports because the kids love them, first of all. And then you have the people in the background who are keeping those relationships going. Because, hey, the coaches have to coach. There's a big part, a big chunk of their year where they're actually coaching and scheming and planning from, you know, August through, you know, hopefully December.
Yeah, and look, it's still a little ways out until the 2024 season, but understandably, some Alabama fans now wondering about the offensive line situation, the tight ends position, where those candidates might be coming from. And I think we've said it many times here, both on the podcast and right there on the roundtable too, Tim. When we know, you'll know. As soon as we know, we'll get it out
there. It's been extremely quiet. It's been extremely quiet. And I think part of that is there's just not a huge rush, right? I mean, you want to get to spring, obviously, but you got enough guys on offense that can get you prepared for spring. I mean, I know everybody wants that coach 5 minutes after the other coach leaves, but I mean, the biggest thing is to get it right, you know, get it right. I mean, you want to find the right coach, the coach that fits in, and there's a process that goes past Kane Womack. There's a process, and I mean on the defensive end, there's a process that would go past Kalen DeBoer on the offensive end. These guys all meet, want to get to know. The guy's got to fit in the room and blend in, and you know, the recruiting philosophy, all that's got to blend in when they hire him. So it's not just bucket steps. You know?
Yeah, it's I think there's continuity that's already in place. That's the big thing. If you go to Nick Sheridan as your offensive coordinator and quarterbacks, you're taking care of the coordinator role. You're taking care of the most important position on the football field with the quarterbacks. That's not to undervalue the importance of the offensive line job, because that's where it all starts, literally and figuratively. And Alabama, of course, is going to have some things to sort out, primarily at the offensive tackle spots when spring practice gets underway here in a month or so. But let's talk about down the road a little bit, because we're already starting to see some projections, Tim, for the 12-team college football playoff that's set to get underway in December of 2024. Brett McMurphy of the Action Network, here in the last day or so, unveiled his initial 12-team projection, and we'll pull it up right here, Tim. And as we do so, what you will see over there in the bottom right-hand corner is the Alabama Crimson Tide as a 10 seed traveling to South Bend, Indiana on what would be a December the 20th date. Think about South Bend on December the 20th. I guess you could say the Lank campaign, as we saw from Alabama in 2023, maybe it won't be going away anytime soon, because Alabama's a 10 seed in the 12-team playoff, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just a natural reaction here. So Alabama, after the first portal window, were 1, 2, 3, or 4, basically. I don't know if they were 1 or not, but they were 3 or 4 ranged by everybody. So they lost Caleb Downs, impact guy, and they lost Isaiah Bond. They lost a few other guys. But they're basically saying those guys were the difference between the fourth team and the 10th team. I think that's crazy. I don't think that's true at all. I mean, you're talking about a safety and a wide receiver who's a real – both are great players, but I don't think that's a difference in the 4th seed and the 10th seed. I think that it's fair to drop Alabama because of Caden Proctor. You don't know who you're – offensive tackles are, but I mean, I love these things. I know people get mad. I love them. I could pick them apart too, but I don't have a problem either way. I think it's very brave and brass, and you really can't hold this accountable, because we don't know anything what's going to happen in April in that portal window. We don't know what these rosters are going. Now this, I'll take a little bit more interest in after that April window closes, right? Because we'll know what Alabama's team is. I mean, is everybody at Ohio State happy that they brought in all these players? You know, that's another thing. We saw them come in. We haven't seen them come out of the portal yet. I imagine there'll be some guys moving on for a lot of these programs. Georgia's going to be strong. Texas is going to be strong. Alabama has a new coaching staff. So I am kind of surprised to see Florida State at 3rd. Seems a little bit high. I feel like they lost a ton of one-year talent last year. I mean, they lost it. You're talking about losing a wide receiver, an impact wide receiver. I mean, Keon Coleman changed their whole offense, a quarterback that matters, some good defensive guys. That might seem a little bit high. I'm not sure there's that big a gap between FSU and Clemson, to be honest.
Feels a little bit like a makeup call in basketball after what happened to the Seminoles in the 2023 season. But I think it's interesting because in Georgia, Texas, Alabama, and Missouri, McMurphy has 4 SEC teams among his initial 12, and of those 4, it's Alabama that would be playing on the road in this scenario, because Brett has Missouri as an 8th seed playing a home game in the first round. It's just kind of wild to look at this when it's laid out in front of you, because, again, December games being played in places like South Bend, Columbia, Missouri, Eugene, Oregon. And we're not talking about December 1st or 2nd. We're getting into December the 20th. It's weather, I think, about too, in a lot of this. And, you know, I think Missouri is interesting because Missouri plays in Tuscaloosa, right? Plays at Alabama this season. So when you see that initially, you go, boy, I guess Brett's just picking Missouri in an upset over the Crimson Tide on the road. But then when you go look at Missouri's schedule in comparison to Alabama's, Missouri could lose at Alabama and still in the regular season with a better record, because especially non-conference, that's atrocious, that record for Missouri, that schedule for Missouri. And then within the league, Missouri doesn't see Georgia, does go to Alabama, but gets Oklahoma at home, gets Vanderbilt, gets Mississippi State, gets Arkansas, doesn't see Ole Miss. So I guess from that perspective, some of this makes some sense.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have – I mean, I was kind of surprised. I don't see Ole Miss on there. Am I missing?
No. No Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Missouri, basically, in the Ole Miss spot.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I guess you're battling between those two. That would surprise some people. I think if Missouri got in over Ole Miss right now. But, yeah, schedule-wise, when you look at Georgia, Georgia's got a tough schedule. Bama's got a tough schedule. Texas has got a tough schedule. So I think maybe you do throw that in there. I love this stuff, though. I love it. I appreciate him doing it. We need to do our own. It's good, debatable. Now, the ones that take it serious, I wouldn't. You know what I mean? I wouldn't take it too serious because we don't know. And I think, you know, I think anybody that does this will admit, hey, this could change in April, right? May 1st, this might be a different 12. But I'm excited looking at this. I don't love a December 20th game. And I have to go back to the schedule, but that was the first day of the signing period last year.
Yeah, could be really crazy.
I don't want to be in that window Wednesday to Friday and then have a game on Saturday. You know what I mean? We're just – they're pushing – they're going to figure out the schedule a little bit.
Yeah, you talk about somebody who's going to love it and who's paying heavily for it is ESPN, man. When you think about December the 20th and December the 21st and you've got Penn State potentially at a Missouri or an Ole Miss, a Boise State at a Texas, Alabama potentially at a Notre Dame, Michigan at an Oregon. Yeah, there will be a lot of eyeballs glued to television sets and streams of some kind relative to telephones, laptops, iPads. Folks are going to be tuned in, to say the least. But so, again, you know, you look at this Alabama roster, even with everything this program has been through post Nick Saban's retirement, you said it earlier, you think this is a top five roster right now. And assuming this staff can sustain much of this roster post spring practice, you know, there's going to be some more movement too. I mean, Absolutely. Once guys work under the new staff and kind of get a feel for the scheme and more importantly, where they project within it, there's going to be some guys that make the move from Alabama, but that's also going to open the window for some other guys to come in knowing that there is opportunity at a place like the Capstone.
Yeah, I think when you look at Alabama, there's fair questions to ask. I don't have a problem with that. The secondary, you know, you've lost a lot of very talented guys. You got some guys coming back. You got extremely talented freshman group coming in, also transferring in Damani. So you've got talent back there, but you haven't really seen as much of. You've seen Malachi. We got some experience, but you've got a lot of guys that's got to prove it, but you know they're talented. The offensive tackle position's legit. You got four on campus. Does somebody bump out? You know what I mean? You got other guards that seem to be a little bit more advanced. You find one in the portal, you know, because it's not going to be easy to go find you a cornerback one and a left tackle in the portal. So you might have to find you a guard and kick somebody out or something like that. So that's why you make millions of dollars, though, to figure out those holes you've got. And quite honestly, after Saban retired, I don't see massive holes other than what happened to tackle. It just got thinner. You know what I mean? I mean, Proctor, heck of a guy. I think he's a heck of a football player. Played the whole year, obviously homesick, a little bit overweight. But he still led the league in Alabama in giving up sacks and pressures allowed. You know, so he still had some growing pains there. So they still had work to do with the offensive tackle position regardless.
Yeah, you know, when I think about the potential for those type of quarterfinals in this scenario too, I think back to this most recent playoff, the last of the 14 playoffs, because there was such an outrage or there was some outrage about Alabama getting in over Florida State. Well, you know, if we had had a 12-team field, Tim, Florida State would have gotten in as the five and would have played a first-round game against Liberty, who would have been the 12. And then you know who would have gotten the winner? You know who would have gotten the winner of that game? Alabama in the quarterfinals. They would have gotten either Florida State without a quarterback.
Florida State would have got Liberty and Bama.
What's that?
Florida State would have had Liberty then Bama.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So
I'm not sure Florida State could win without their quarterback. I don't think that was an unfair Yeah, that's a big position. That's for the rest of the world. We know that's an important position. Take Patrick Mahomes off the Chiefs. You know, they probably don't win the Super Bowl.
The point is, the outrage would have extended with a 12 team, because if you're Georgia, you're pissed because you're the six and you got a tougher road game than Florida State has. I guess Georgia would have been at home as a six. But if you're Michigan as the one seed, your quarterfinal game most likely would have been against Georgia, while Alabama plays either a quarterbackless Florida State or Liberty in the quarterfinal. So I guess it
a shows. Very upset Georgia team, too, with a lot to prove. Very talented.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about some NFL Combine invites for the Alabama Crimson Tide. As we learned in the last 24 hours, Alabama with 10 invitees to Indianapolis for the annual Olympics of the undergarments, as I like to call it, up there. And when you look at this list, Tim, were there any surprises for you, any omissions when you look at Jace McClellan, Jermaine Burton, J.C. Latham, Justin Aboigbe, Dallas Turner, Chris Braswell, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Terrion Arnold, Jalen Key? That might be a little bit of a surprise. He gets the invite. Will Reichard gets to go to Indianapolis as a kicker. What about that list?
Yeah, I like it. I'm pretty excited to see Jace. I hope he's healthy. I think he has a chance. I still think Jace is probably going to be that third to fifth round pick that's going to stick in the NFL six, seven, 8 years. Those guys tend to do well. The move the pile in between tackle guys that can receive. And we know he can block. You know, so he's going to have some things. I'm really excited to see what Will Reichard does there. I watch this thing every year. I watch it, and it's insane because there's so much downtime. I watch it, and I'll watch it, and I'll go back and rewind and watch some of the highlights. I watch it every year. I love it. I have a good time with it. But, Alabama's going to be well represented. They got a chance to increase their stock. Everybody's going to be looking at Kool-Aid. To me, I'm going to be looking at Kool-Aid. What does he run? I want to see what J.C. Latham weighs. I want to see if he drops weight to get ready for the combine. There's questions there, but you know, Burton, what do you do with Jermaine Burton? You know, I think his interviews are going to be different is the best way I could describe it. I don't think he's going to give you the standard interview that Terrion Arnold is. You know what I mean? I think Jermaine could be very interesting. Not necessarily bad, but a little bit different. But boy, he looks like a wide receiver too in the NFL to me. Big body, good hands, route runner.
I'm not saying he's Odell Beckham Jr., but he's got some physical traits that to me are reminiscent of Odell Beckham Jr. Now, again, not expecting that kind of career for Jermaine, but I think he's got some translatable attributes to the next level. And I think you're right on J.C. Latham. He's going to be fascinating to watch in terms of where he's at, because you know, I think he's obviously still viewed as a tackle, but do you think some teams are looking at him at 360 and saying, hey, we might need to push this guy inside where he could still be like a Trey Smith for the Chiefs, outstanding guard for the Chiefs from the University of Tennessee. But is it that sort of scenario that could play out for JC?
Yeah, I think I'm curious to see. I would expect him to lose weight to get ready for the draft, to be on that edge guy. Hey, you can make a lot of money on that interior. I remember 15 years ago, nobody thought a whole lot of the interior offensive line when it came to the draft. And then all of a sudden you had, you know, the Cowboys drafted a center first round. We've seen Quentin Nelson, who's one of the most dominant offensive linemen in the history of football, go. I think he went sixth, beat out his own teammate who went ninth as an offensive left tackle. So we've seen that value, Ryan Kelly, we've seen that value increase. Dallas Warmack, that was the year that kind of took off. Cooper from, I think his name was from North Carolina, and then Dallas, they both went very hard. Is it Chance? Yeah, it's Chance, right? I'm mixing them up. But you had the guards going in the top 10, so that's changed everything. So you can make a lot of money there. Trey Smith, obviously, was a good football player, I think he had a medical condition, heart or something.
Deal. Yeah.
Ended up in the fifth round, maybe six, maybe lower. I mean, he ended up really low, and I think he started every game that he was there. So, but yeah, I think with him, it's just going to come down. He's a talented guy. He's going to check a lot of boxes. I don't know if he wants to move in. He's shown some flexibility, but I do think for tackle, he's probably going to be lighter if he sticks at tackle in the NFL.
Yeah. Injury updates, big. from the combine as medicals, well. When you talk about medicals, I think Jace McClellan, when I think of medicals, because he had an assortment of issues during his time with the Crimson Tide, and none more so than Justin Aboigbe. I mean, you start talking about neck, back, those type of issues. You're going to have some teams that might just disqualify Justin Aboigbe before even really going through much more of the process, given the type of situation he came back from.
Yeah, and that happens. That's similar to Trey Smith. I remember the Raiders had a guy, defensive lineman, maybe from Michigan State, that had some kind of issue. And a lot of teams, I think he was a first, projected to be a first-round pick, had the medical issues as of his last year in college. I think he was from Michigan State, but he ended up dropping fifth or sixth round and, of course, was cleared. Once he got cleared, he was fine. But, I mean, you never know. An NFL team will knock you heavily for any kind of medical. They're looking like, I'm not sure exactly. Sometimes they overthink it, obviously, but some will bump you right off their list because of your medical history.
Give me a medalist stand for the 40 for these four guys. I think it's four we'll go with. We'll go with Jace McClellan, Jermaine Burton, Kool-Aid, and Terrion Arnold. Give me gold, silver, bronze for the 40 in Indianapolis between the running back, the wide receiver, and the two defensive backs.
I'll go Terrion Gold. I wonder if Jace is healthy with his foot. I'll give him the silver and bronze. I'll go Kool-Aid. I think Kool-Aid's going to work on his 40 time. And I've never even had a clue what Burton ran, to be honest. I know he's pretty fast when he's running. I've never even thought about how fast he was. His recruitment was so weird, how he got to Bama. Sup, Tex Tider. How he got to Bama was so weird. Mm-hmm. His recruitment, high school, moved to California, committed to LSU, flipped on signing day to Georgia, beat Alabama for national championship, and came to Alabama. So he's had quite the – he's been a hard one to pin down. But, again, like you said, he's got traits.
Yeah, there's a guy in Jermaine Burton who's been in the Alabama program for 2 years, and you still feel like, as you just said, you don't know a lot about this guy. And so even for Alabama fans, even for people like ourselves, I think there are some things that will be revealed about Jermaine Burton that might be pretty pretty interesting coming up here in a couple weeks in Indianapolis. Hey, Tim, let's get into some hoops, because the last time I checked, Nate Oates's team sits all by itself now atop the SEC standings after South Carolina went to Auburn on Wednesday night and got absolutely shellacked. You talk about a Valentine's Day massacre. Boy, the Tigers, after getting woodshedded themselves in Gainesville over the weekend, bounced back in strong fashion. I don't know, and Alabama's very good at home too, but right now there may not be a tougher place to get a road win than in Auburn.
Yeah, Auburn's a tough place. I mean, first of all, it's a good team. It's got a good coach. So those things go hand in hand. They got a very passionate fan base, small stadium. I know some people take it as an insult to say it's like a high school feel, but if you've ever been to a fantastic high school game, and I lived in Indiana, I've seen them in Birmingham, I've seen them my whole life. Dude, there ain't nothing like the crowd leaning on you on the sideline. I've seen that a dozen times in Birmingham alone. The crowd is in your business. You know what I mean? In Auburn, I don't think it's an insult at all to say it's like it's a great high school game that, and those atmosphere are off the chart. But yeah, I mean, South Carolina, I mean, they did not have a couple of good trips to the state of Alabama, right? They did not. I mean, South Carolina is a good basketball team, but they have been beaten by like 70 points, close to 70 by Bama and Auburn. This has just been, then they are a much better team than that. They've got wins and all, and they tried to hang. I think they jumped out 9-0, 9-2 last night. Mm-hmm. And then Auburn just took over. Well, Auburn was just better, you know, the better basketball team. Tennessee blew out Arkansas, you know, a couple games to watch last night. I don't know what is happening with the Arkansas program. Yeah. I mean, I just can't. How did they go? I mean, you had your shirt off last year, right? You know, you had your shirt. Now you got your pants pulled down. You're getting your butt spanked. You know what I mean? We gotta keep our clothes on out there in Fayetteville. You know,
yeah, little E. It's not so easy for Eric Musselman.
I mean, he enjoyed it. when he was on, you know, I wouldn't even say he was on top. He was on like, you know, he was like that guy that stopped 500 yards from the top of Mount Everest. He was almost at the top, didn't quite make it, but had such a good talented team last year. And to see this year's team is just, it's brutal. But yeah, Auburn and Tennessee are both good basketball teams, and you know, won big last night. And that SEC, I mean, it's a fun race. I mean, you're gonna have a little anxiety with it, but it's a fun race.
Alabama with just a daunting 7-game stretch to close the regular season, starting with Texas A&M at Coleman Coliseum on Saturday. Alternative uniform game for Nate Oates' team. What do you think about those threads, Tim?
Those are nice. Those are nice. Yeah. My first thing was hilarious was one of our favorites, Melvin Seahorse, says, "I need those shorts." He was so excited. They were old logo on the short, the crimson tie. They look fantastic. I can't imagine you put those on the shelves, right? Those are going to be very, very popular. I saw
Mark Sears got his jersey up pretty quick.
Yeah, I saw the people that do the NIL. What's it called? Athletes. I can't remember the name of the website, but they, I should know the name. We just brought my son the length shirt, but they had the stuff up there. Not the same thing. Doesn't have the Nike swoosh, but it looks good. I mean, it's a good look. You know, if you want to support the team NIL, you can go pick your favorite player, the jersey. They had jackets. They had hoodies. I mean, they had the whole nine thing. I love the look personally, you know, and when you think about it, when you were growing up as a kid, you loved those old uniforms, right? And then we went to this like bland, I mean, the Astros had a crazy wild, you know, I mean, you go through all the teams, the Braves old A, you go through all these teams that you covered. They were great. And I don't think we appreciated it much, but they're throwbacks for us, but for the younger people, they're just like, oh, it's fire. You know, they love
it. Brand new.
Yeah. For them, it's brand, literally it's brand new. You know, there's no difference. So I love they do that, but yeah, Alabama hit a home run with the, they hit a home run with that, I thought.
I like it from a psychological perspective. I said this yesterday on the show with Charlie and Clint. I like it from that perspective, too, because it keeps your locker room juiced, and you're going to need all of it you can get, starting with the stretch that gets underway with A&M on Saturday. Early tip-off, 11 a.m. Central. Wade Taylor coming to town. Tyrese Radford coming to town. Those two guys in the backcourt averaging a combined 35 points per game. Between them in a blowout of Tennessee last Saturday, 25 for Wade Taylor, 27 for Tyrese Radford. Then you got Anderson Garcia, a bit of a glass eater there in the paint. He had 33 boards and wins over Missouri and Tennessee. Only had 6 in a loss to Vanderbilt a couple of nights ago. But he and Henry Coleman III, they'll pose a challenge in the paint. So don't sleep on A&M based on what you've seen to this point or even what you saw midweek in Nashville, because this is going to be a fun game. I know that because of Taylor and Radford and Alabama's guards. Going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I do want to say that was Athletes Threads. That is not a promo. I mean, I'm just telling you where it's at. We don't actually get a promo code or they don't pay us, but I did want to say Athletes Threads got those throwback jerseys. But yeah, I agree. I mean, with Bama, I think they've got 7 one-game seasons is how I'm looking at it. You just got to – I don't think you can get ahead of yourself. I don't think you can get too high with a win. I don't think you can get too low with a loss. I mean, you're probably not coming out of that 7-0, right?
No.
So you might as well get prepared that you're going to have to battle. Auburn's got some games. Tennessee's got some games. You know, you got to head up with Tennessee. You know, so
two games with Florida are sneaky.
Yeah, Florida's good. Sneaky good. I think they were like 17-7. I think I looked it up last night. They're 17-7. Something.
They're like 6-1 in their last 7. I mean, they almost blew the game against LSU the other night at home, but
yeah, that's the thing with basketball. I mean, you get hot at the right time, and we've seen those teams, you know, historically make runs. Now, it's probably not the ideal time to make your NCAA run, but it is your ideal time to make your NCAA seeding run, you know. So yeah, it's a tough conference. I mean, I looked up, we became Nick Saban retired and we became a basketball conference, right?
It looks that way right now, man. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. I'll tell you, other than North Carolina Duke twice a season, the ACC can have it right now. I never thought I would say that 10 years ago. I used to watch a ton of ACC basketball. I know you did too. I don't watch hardly any ACC basketball right now. It's pretty much SEC basketball. Obviously, my job entails that I do that. But even when I don't have to, that's where my attention is focused.
I tend with the ACC. Now, if it's a big game, I saw Carolina Duke not long ago, and I tend to like find the flow of the game. If I see 17 minutes left and it's a good game, I'll go watch it. But I tend not to start. You're right. I tend not to start like I used to, but when we used to watch it, I mean, it was the absolute best of the best. Used to post
up with, I mean, the SEC has Maryland two teams. Or something.
Yeah. SEC has two teams that don't have at least a 500 record overall. Yeah. That's kind of absurd. And a lot of them have pretty good win percentages. So basketball's changed. Have you been watching any of the NBA lately?
I have not. You're our senior NBA correspondent. I'm the PGA Tour guy, Tim. That's the dynamic we agreed upon.
And softball.
And softball and women's basketball. I've got those.
Throw that to you. Savannah helps you with that. You kind of like get a cheat with your daughter. You know what I mean? Like, she's throwing you out there. But Herb Jones, Brandon Miller, I mean, he continues to play. Like any other year, I think he's in the heavy discussion. He should be in the discussion this year for Rookie of the Year. But, you know, he had 26 points and 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 blocks for Stretch last night. And the Charlotte Hornets are on a heater with 3 straight wins. Kind of surprising. It's not a very good basketball team. The LaMelo Ball's out. They're missing their big man from Duke, Mark Williams. They're missing guys. But, yeah, NBA's fun. Colin Sexton's having a good year. The Jazz are a very sporadic team. But the Bama guys are playing extremely well.
And now
I think we got the All-Star break, right, coming up?
Yeah.
We got the NBA All-Star game. Do you still watch that, or how does that work?
I'll watch some of it. I'm not an NBA hater, to be clear. Yeah. But social media in some sports has just turned me into more of that type of follower. The NBA is kind of one of them. Yeah. Major League Baseball to an extent. I zoom in on, obviously, college football, college basketball, and the NFL. But Tiger Woods is playing on the PGA Tour this week, Tim. So that's, I'm going to go ahead and interject that right here.
Absolutely. Throw that in there.
Tiger's got that new logo now. You know,
who is he sponsored by?
TaylorMade. Nike and Tiger split.
Because of that divorce.
Probably what they were paying him versus how much he was actually not only playing, which is minimal because of all the injuries and everything physically he's put himself through. But he isn't a guy you see on television as a broadcaster or any other type of form. If Tiger ain't playing, you don't see Tiger. So TaylorMade was probably willing to step up, pony up a little bit more for Tiger than
for the record, I will not watch the All-Star game. I absolutely will.
The NBA All-Star game?
I don't know, but the game, just like the Pro Bowl, I mean, it's going to be 183 to 180. You know,
the games themselves are like that now.
Yeah,
I mean, the regular season games are like that.
Yeah, I mean, I still remember when they actually would like defend you and foul you in the All-Star games. I know that's an old man statement, but it was true.
Yeah,
they would foul you instead of giving you an easy layup. It was it was different. I don't mind it, but like you said, I don't need to see an All-Star game. What I can see Steph Curry shoot from half court literally every night.
Yeah,
that guy's a psycho. He went in a good way. So he was leaving the game last night to go from the warm-ups to the locker room. And from the friggin' pathway to the locker room, you can pull this up while I'm talking. He threw a hook shot to the other friggin' end of the court and made it. Pull that up if you can. Steph Curry, dude, I'm telling you, this looks like it's a fake commercial.
Let me see if I can find it. I don't know.
It is bananas.
And then I got to worry about copyright issues if I do find it. So
you have to pull it up. I was just telling you. I want you to see. It's the most bananas shot he made.
From the tunnel?
Yeah, from the tunnel.
Yeah, I'm watching it right here. All the way, full length of the court, heave from the opposite diagonal tunnel as he's going in.
Like a hook.
Yeah.
And made it.
That is
wild. Literally looks like it's a fake commercial and he made it. But anyways, I'm in a cycle in a good way. Like, it's unbelievable. All right, moving on.
Let's get into the roundtable mailbag, because they'll get on us in the comments here. You know, if we get off topic, Tim, we don't talk about the fourth team left guard.
Look, you don't come up here with two old heads. Y'all don't come on a show with two old guys and say you can't get off topic. Y'all lost your damn mind.
You ever been to a barber shop?
Yes. You ever been to a porch?
Kind of like what this is. Yeah. You just got to deal with it. You got to bear with us here.
You're lucky we're even talking about sports. One wrong turn and we're in Vermont and Maine, people.
We'll get back to the third team holder here in just a minute. Trust me. Tide Hashira here in the roundtable mailbag. Where do you guys think DeBoer could look for a tight end coach, Tim? You know what I thought? We saw a couple weeks ago, Jay Nunez apparently was leaving Oklahoma as sort of a special teams analyst to go to Alabama. He also has some tight end coaching in his background. I'm not saying he's the guy, but it's just to underscore the different avenues in which Kalen DeBoer might be looking for a subsequent replacement for Nick Sheridan, assuming Sheridan is moving into that OC role with quarterbacks.
I think Kalen DeBoer's searches, for the most part, are going to be pretty similar to Nick Saban, where it could come out of left field. Pete Golding from UTSA, Robert Bala. I mean, this isn't like he just did it every now and then. He had guys coming from all over the place. I think Kalen DeBoer could do that. And again, this is a guy that's been at, you know, Fresno, Indiana. He's been at Washington. He's got coaching connections across the country. Is he rep by Jimmy Sexton? I think he is, right? Yeah, he would have to be.
Who isn't? Yeah.
I would think. Yeah, I would. Yeah, that's a good question. So I think that there'll be some guys Sexton manages that could get looks, at least interviews. You know what I mean? So, right now it's been extremely quiet. I think it's just the time of season getting back. And I just don't think he's in a rush, honestly. I think he wants to get it right.
Bro Namath here in the mailbag. Top five high school basketball players Tim Watts has ever seen in person. Wow. Five. That's a lot.
I don't know. I mean, if you're talking national, Kevin Durant. Saw Kevin Durant several times. Just a bananas type player.
I'm going to guess you saw him in Augusta, Georgia a time or two.
I did. I also saw him, I tell you, in New Orleans at the 16 and under nationals.
Vegas.
Unbelievable event. Kevin Durant, you knew was going to, you know, I mean, you knew what he was pretty early on. I saw Chris Paul twice, I think, his last year. You knew what he was going to be. Some of these guys were already capable of being on an NBA bench, if not impacting the game. Derrick Rose, that was a great story, because we went clear across Houston. It used to be a tournament called the Kingwood Classic, and we drove way out of the way because we had helped an AAU coach in Chicago. A great dude with a three-star player the year before. He kept telling me, and I hear this a lot, I got the number one player. I got the five-star. We hear it a lot. They usually don't have them. We drove clear across to a gym, walked in, and the only people there were parents and three referees. And within two or three plays, it was Derrick Rose, unranked, catching alley-oop passes and dunking. It was one of the highlights of me covering AAU basketball. But – you know, in-state, Gerald Wallace, Ron Steele, they come to mind. Eric Bledsoe is a fantastic player. Dwight Howard, Earl Smith, Rajon Rondo. I mean, all those guys were just a little different. You know, J.R. Smith is, I mean, he's one of the best athletes I've ever seen. I don't think you can be a better athlete. I think he's very similar to LeBron. He was a heck of a ball player. He could shoot from 30. He could do all that stuff. In today's game, he'd be an all-star every year. I don't think, you know, his focus was entirely on the game, but I was blessed to see a lot of them. I was blessed. The Lopez twins are two of my favorite. they were probably what you would think they are. Very high IQ, good basketball players. But I was blessed to see a lot of basketball players when I was covering AAU.
100 years ago, they would have the AAU Nationals in Jacksonville, Florida at Florida State. At Florida State College of Jacksonville. And one year it was Michigan with Chris Webber, Jawan Howard, Jalen Rose, that made it to the final against Team Indiana. You remember Alan Henderson?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Played at Indiana. He was on the Indiana team. Chris Brand was a guard that played at Tennessee from Indiana.
I do.
Yeah, those were some fun times. What's the do you have a craziest recruiting story, Tim? I don't know if this is supposed to be basketball, football, or whatever, but bro's asking here.
The favorite, the craziest recruiting story. I mean, I've got them. I don't know. They kind of all blend in. I mean, some of the stuff you hear behind the scenes, Brent Callaway certainly stands out. Guy going back and forth with Auburn, a whole lot of drama, you know, with that one, a lot of accusations and stuff like that. I mean, Reuben Foster's probably my favorite, you know, from the time, you know, I was told he rolled into Tuscaloosa like 10 or 11 people deep on an unofficial visit. So from that moment, committing to Bama, Auburn, flipping to Auburn, Auburn tattoo, going to Auburn for his last weekend official visit. And again, I was watching Eric Anders, minding my business, MMA up in Mountain Brook, and I get a text with a screenshot. Reuben was with Alvin Kamara eating lunch in the Alabama mess hall. I don't know if you call it mess hall. They're not in the military. I don't know what you – cafeteria, whatever you want to call it. And he was there, and I was like, what the hell? He just went to Auburn last night. Obviously, he had an issue with one of the Auburn scholarship players. So Reuben's probably the craziest, I think, just to follow. Is like you could probably write a book on Reuben from, you know, freshman year to, you know, his career in the NFL. He's still playing, right? He still played in some small league. I saw he got drafted. So
yeah, he is. I think it was a UFL now. You know, we're going to unite. He's the XFL and the USFL.
Yeah, he was a heck. I mean, he was just that guy that just didn't, you know, just an unbelievably, you talking about old school people loved him. He just would, I mean, he would just absolutely kill you. But his recruit, I mean, we've had several, but Reuben's is probably the most visible. That was the most entertaining.
Always enjoy story time with Uncle Tim here on the program. Roll_Tide wants to know, any chance Alabama steals Joe Cox back from Ole Miss for tight ends coach? Typically, it's not something you see a lot of because these guys have, in most cases, right, they have sit-downs with the incoming head coach. And, you know, that opportunity, it either seems to happen at that point or it doesn't. Maybe this could be an exception.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I think he'll have the guys. I mean, I think you know if you want to keep somebody or not, right? There's no real connections. Also, Joe Cox is already on staff and recruiting for Ole Miss. So I would not think, I mean, it's coaching, if we have to say anything's possible, but I would not think that would happen.
Bama bullies here in the roundtable mailbag. He wants to know top five high school football players we've seen. He has Ryan Williams at the top of his list. He is a South Alabama and Florida Panhandle guy, Bama Bullies is. So he has them: Ryan Williams, Julio Jones, DJ Fluker, CJ Mosley, Trent Richardson as his top five from his region. That's pretty stout, Tim. What about you?
Me? I saw D'Amico Ryans in high school. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's who you thought he was going to be at the end. It's funny he had no offers, but I do think – in this day and age of the huddle film, I do think that he would have had plenty of scholarship offers in hindsight. Just one of those guys that slipped through. When I was young, I went and saw David Palmer with one of my brothers. I don't even know. I mean, I don't know if I've created this myth in my head, but I know he scored 4 touchdowns, and I believe it was in 4 different ways. I wasn't in football like I was now, but I could see how much talent he was and the excitement that he brought in the crowd. Andre Smith, the most dominant player I've ever seen on a football field, went out there and saw him and just absolutely just crushed everybody. Just, you know, Dancing Bear, the original Dancing Bear for me. Jalen Mbakwe, he's definitely one that's up there. Julio Jones in the 7-on-7 setting was amazing. So was Jamarcus Russell. But yeah, I mean, that's it. The best, you know, I think the best, one of my best stories is D. Milliner. So I get that. I hear nobody's talking about D. So I hear there's a kid at Stanhope Elmore. I go down there for a Thursday night game and he's excited. You know, I'm trying to blend in on the sidelines and in the stands. He's so excited. He's trying to talk to me in the game, you know, and I'm like, no, you're going to get me screamed at by your coach. Just go on. And he had a pick, picked off a pass, returned a punter, a kickoff, tackled everything, had an offensive pass, touchdown, wide receiver. So I'm getting ready to leave, and I had everything I needed. I was going to talk to him after the game the next day, not stay for that. And he said, "Hey, how'd I do? Why are you leaving early?" And I'm like, "Because you did all you needed to do. Like, you got me home an hour. You did so much in three." He's one of the best athletes and football players I've ever seen. And he was great at Alabama. We forget, you know, he goes to the NFL and has those injuries. But Dean Miller was a monster.
He really was. I'm a Florida guy, obviously.
I've seen a bunch.
So I saw Emmitt Smith as a sophomore at Escambia High School. And that's how old I am, by the way. Did I just age myself? That was in the mid-80s. I was like 83, 84.
I saw Emmitt in third grade when Travis was a junior in high school.
I did. And he was pretty special as a sophomore at Escambia High School in Pensacola. I saw Dante Culpepper when he was, I believe, at Ocala Forest High School. He was in Ocala. Saw him. He was pretty damn amazing for a high school quarterback. I'd have Anquan Boldin up there, too. Played at Pahokee High School down in South Florida. Saw a lot of guys from Broward and Dade, but yeah.
I got one more.
One more too. Robert Pollard. I know people get tired of me talking about Robert. He has since passed and really didn't become a huge college star like he should have, or an NFL star even, but he was 6'2", about 210 as a ninth or 10th grader at the Bowles School in Jacksonville. The best football player to ever play at the Bowles School. And we can go down a list of some guys.
Oh, yeah.
With Robert Pollard. Don't get it twisted. Don't let anybody try to change your thinking on that. Robert was a real deal. Go ahead.
Carnell Williams. He's one.
Yeah.
Cadillac. I didn't want to mention just Alabama guys. I thought Carnell in a season opener, I think it was his senior year, he had a cramp in his left leg and you could hear the scream from it. And he went back in the game. He had a cramp in his right leg, season opener. It's that time of year where it's warm in the day and getting cool at night. Had a cramp in his right leg. You can hear him scream. He goes back in the game, fourth quarter, and this cat caught double cramps in both legs. And it sounded like a horror movie. He screamed so loud that like people were like covering their mouth, but he kept playing. Offense, defense. He could have been an all NFL safety, I'm convinced, but he's probably the best Auburn player that I ever saw. Amazing.
Bama bullies also asking, with Kalen DeBoer seeming to like taller receivers, any chance we see Odom used at wide receiver a good bit this year? That's true freshman Caleb Odom. And Tim, we talked about Caleb in the past. That's kind of how he was used in some ways on the high school level, and probably as much as anything early on in his career at Alabama. It might be a surprise if you don't see him flexed out a good bit.
Yeah, I think you can line him up anywhere, right? You know, yeah. I think you can line him up anywhere as far as an offensive pass play goes. I mean, he's a big guy. He's got a good catch radius. I don't think he's a 4-4 guy, which would be the only knock, but they hardly ever are. But I think he's got good speed. He's got good hands. You get him in there, let him, you know, learn the system, learn the routes. But, yeah, I'd agree that's a possibility.
Crown and Soda here in the mailbag. With the Tide only having four tackles going into the spring, which of the nine interior O-linemen do you think are most likely to kick out to tackle? Guards who could get a look at tackle, Tim. You think about some of these guys like Tyler Booker, even Jaden Roberts.
He's my choice. Jaden's my
guys that could kick out at tackle. I think Olas Alenin is a young player that maybe this new staff says, you know what, let's at least take a look at him at tackle.
Yeah, well, I think you have two different things here. You have a Washington staff that like lighter, more athletic offensive linemen. You had a former Alabama staff that liked them bigger, stronger, like the NFL. They lost some athleticism with that. So I think one of the things that held back the young guys was the fact that they were lighter. They weren't quite big enough. But, hey, they might be right where, you know, that's the thing is, like, just because you're looking for something don't mean you don't have it on your campus. You had two pretty good tackles. You had the best, you know, one of the best freshman offensive linemen in the country. And you had a guy that's going to go in the first round of the draft, boxing them out. But if I had to pick a guy to kick out, I would not bet on Jaden Roberts on anything. If they moved him to defensive end or defensive tackle, I'd bet on him. I just think, you know, as we saw, like you said, you described it perfectly. Dude's just always looking for work. he wants that challenge. You know what I mean? And he's the guy. He's a, what's he started? 5, 6, 7 games. I don't even know how many total. Booker's been entrenched there for a while. You know, he's probably like, you know, I got this. I really don't want to move. But I mean, Roberts might excel, and he's got that body, that long length, long arms. He might be the guy, but they could like some of those freshmen on campus. You know, they might have guys, and you know, you've got the Texas A&M transfer that nobody knows about. Like, we don't have a clue. We know he's a big guy. His senior film was certainly good enough. He had a weird, you know, academic issues, and then, you know, reclassified, enrolled in Texas A&M. Like, so they could have their guy on campus. But regardless, if they've got two tackles they're comfortable with, they're still going to want some depth at that position on the offensive line. So they'll still be in the portal, in my opinion.
Goes to Bryant here in the mailbag. Record-wise, what would a successful first season for Kalen DeBoer look like? Is making the playoff a fair year one goal? I think, Tim, with a 12-team playoff, it is more than fair to, yeah, to think that his first team could make the CFP.
Assuming, and you'd have to think that's a possibility, that teams with two losses make the 12-team playoff. I can't imagine there's 12 one-team losses. But, I mean, you got to look at the schedule, and you got to think, you know, Bama's got 4 games I think you could circle that they're going to be super competitive. Possibly 5 if you count it at Wisconsin. You got Georgia, who's going to be the preseason number one team in the country, 1 or 2. You're at Tennessee. That's a mess. You know Knoxville, Neyland does a great job there. At LSU, at Oklahoma. So you got 3 tough road games. You got Georgia at home. I think the worst case, I think they'll win. I mean, 9 wins, I think I feel pretty good about with this team right now. But I do think 10 wins is pretty realistic. I do think you have to accept that you're probably going to have trouble going undefeated. And I think Georgia and Texas are looking at this same exact scenario, right? Georgia and Texas both can't go undefeated because they play each other, you know? So this schedule, you're going to be looking at a loss. And luckily, the 2 losses with the 12 teams doesn't mean what it used to mean. You know, 2 losses in the past and you were gone. So I think the playoffs is a realistic possibility and a goal as we speak now. In April, we might feel Bama's even a lot for it, feel like more comfortable with that, or we might feel it's a harder obstacle ahead of them. So,
yeah, I think if 10-2 is what it takes essentially to get you into the 12-team college football playoff, looking at the schedule, looking at this roster, I think that's a very fair expectation in year one under Kalen DeBoer. Let's get back into the mailbag. CEH for Bama wants to know, how good can this Alabama softball team be? We'll also get to the second part of this one here with him as well. Well, based on the opening weekend, I'd say pretty darn good. Now, what's interesting to me is that you're going to see Alabama and Florida once again square off in SEC play, but neither of those teams in the preseason anyway ranked in the top 10. I mean, they are the cornerstone programs for the Southeastern Conference on the softball diamond. But Caleb Beaver comes in, does what you need her to do as a transfer pitcher in the wake of Montana Fouts moving on, at least in that opening weekend. And offensively, there was some impressive stuff. But I thought defensively, that may have been most encouraging to come from that trip to Atlanta with that 5-0 start. 5 games, I think it was just 1 error committed. Because with Beaver, she did strike out, I want to say, 21 batters. Or had 14 strikeouts, had a lot of strikeouts, but she's going to be more of a pitch to contact pitcher for Alabama than Montana Fouts, who could have a game where she struck out 12, 15. So you're going to have to play some good defense behind the staff now. And, Alabama initially at least showed some of that. Also, CEH for Bama wants to know, Tim, what's the difference in titles for Freddie and Robert Gillespie in terms of that associate versus assistant titles that we talked about earlier for both of these guys, respectively? My understanding anyway is that the associate tag is about as high as you can get before the head coach title, whereas assistant might be a step below associate.
I actually had an educated friend who thought that, like, if something happened to Kalen DeBoer, Freddie Roach was the next coach. Now, I don't know if that's true, like the vice and vice president and the president, Yeah. But I thought the analogy had me really laughing that would happen. I don't know the difference. I'm going to dig into that. I've never really thought about it.
I think that's it, though. I think it is. It's higher on the executive chain for coaches, the associate tag.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. I mean, we know it's a, you know, it gets you a little bit more of a bump. It's a little bit about respect too. I mean, shoot, we deal with that in our business, you know?
Yeah.
We have a lot of guys discuss. I've never been a title guy. I've never cared. But I understand why some people do. You know, there's a difference between staff writer, senior staff writer, recruiting analyst, senior recruiting analyst. It's kind of a respect thing. So in college football, I think it's absolutely similar. Plus it comes with more money. I'm going to find out what the responsibilities difference are, though.
Yeah, money is usually what it's about. You'll see, like, a coach that's coming back for another year go from just a position tag to assistant head coach or co-offensive coordinator. Usually what that indicates, Tim, is that there was some interest in that guy in the offseason. And to keep him, the title had to go up, and with that, the money.
Yeah. And I think in corporate America, you got to add the title to justify the extra money, right?
You do.
I remember Holman Wigan was associate or assistant head coach out of the blue.
Which told me that previous offseason, someone or multiple schools had come calling. And Nick wanted to keep him because we've seen Nick let guys move on too.
Situations. We've seen him encourage them. We've seen him help find people get other jobs.
Nick had his own temp agency at times, it felt like.
Yeah. He was as good as Jimmy Sexton when he wanted to be.
Yeah. Yeah. He could be. There's no doubt about that. More from the mailbag. But Paul here in the mailbag, he says, thank y'all for doing this. Oh, thank you for tuning in.
No problem, man.
Paul. These are always my favorite episodes of the podcast. Here you go, Tim. Got a fan there, but
yeah, one fan.
He wants to know, do you think Alabama enters fall camp with both Jalen Milroe and Ty Simpson still on the roster? That's after spring practice and maybe even a summer of workouts. I think, Tim, if one isn't on the roster, it won't take until fall camp to probably figure that out. I don't know.
Yeah. You can't hold me to this. Let me be clear. But I think they will both be here in August. You know, I think Ty Simpson stayed because he felt he can compete. He's getting a fresh start with the new offense. He might very well do some things. Now, look, he could have hit the portal. Someone talked him into staying, right? You don't talk people into staying that you want to leave. So have an effect on it. Also, the one thing we've said numerous times about Ty Simpson, he's picky. He's not just going anywhere. You know, he's just not going to slide over to a school he's not comfortable with. No situation is easy. And I think, again, for Ty Simpson and for anybody who wasn't a starter, this is a whole new chance to impress yourself. And it's the same for Jalen. He's got to impress these guys that he can make the throws and do the things because this is a passing offense. You know, Jalen's a good runner. Ty is not given nearly enough credit. He's a good runner. Jalen's a next-level runner. But Ty's a very good runner. So I think they'll both be here in August. I think this is going to be a quarterback battle. I don't know, battle. It's going to be a quarterback, you know.
Competition,
but with Jalen definitely having the upper hand to start with. He's got a lot of experience, too. You know, yeah, Jalen's best is as good as anybody's best, basically.
And he has the trust of that roster for the most part, you would think, you know. There's a dynamic you take into account, especially with the quarterback position. That being said, you're still going to have to perform and you're still going to have to show that you can fit into what these core principles of this Kalen DeBoer offense demand of you and get the job done. But Paul also, he gives us a gun to our heads. Here comes a gun to your head. So be ready. As of right now, would you pick Alabama to win 2 of 3 against Georgia, Tennessee, and Oklahoma? Still so much time and things to sort out, Tim, but would you feel okay about picking Alabama to win 2 of those 3?
I wouldn't feel great right now. I wouldn't feel great. I mean, Georgia, again, number one team in the country, have been kicked around by Saban quite a bit. They're going to come in motivated. Now, of course, Alabama is going to be just as motivated. Bryant Denny is fantastic. I hope that's a night game because it'll be off the charts if it is. So obviously I'm giving Alabama a chance there, but a very tough game at Neyland. Is I think Alabama can win that game. They've proven for years they've won that game. In fact, the one time they didn't win it, it took every single thing in the world to allow Tennessee to drag those posts down to that river, you know, and pollute it. But so I give them a chance, but I would say, you know, 60% chance they win two out of three. I'd say, you know, 85% chance they'll win one. And I'd say 25% chance they win all three. That's right now. Again, yeah. I don't know the secondary and you don't know the tackles, but I do think this is extreme. And I'm a little bit on the air on the side of caution with you guys, because, you know, I mean, I've had commitment stories written when I predicted them and put in a 90% prediction, just because I don't want y'all to kill me if the unexpected happens.
I think Alabama wins two of the three. I think Alabama beats Oklahoma in Norman, and then I feel pretty comfortable predicting at least a split of Georgia and Tennessee. Tennessee right now has our attention primarily because of Nico, right? Jumping in there at the quarterback. Yeah. What else do we really know about Tennessee for next season other than Nico? And that's a big one, because that dude looks like he could be a monster behind center.
Yeah. Nico's going to be a good football player. I mean, Tennessee's NIL invested so much, they're under investigation for him, which is
– he better be.
I still one of the dumbest – I don't understand. They're
about
to get
a postseason ban.
You can't go ban – I mean, I don't know how you investigate somebody for finding your loophole. You know what I mean? That's a mess. Yeah. But obviously a talented guy, can throw it, can run it, you know, got a huge skill set. I don't think Tennessee's recruited great under Josh Heupel, though.
No.
I think they've been solid.
Where are the dudes at 3 years into this?
I think they've been solid, but I think they focused. I mean, they got the transfer tackle Hurd from LSU. He's a good player. They got him. Missed out on Jordan Seaton. I mean, they've got talent, but you kind of expected – because you heard so much about their NIL, right? And they went, but it was really with Nico, they went the heaviest. And so not as talented as some of the other teams in the SEC, but still a good coaching staff. Josh Heupel, you know, I've heard people compare him and Kalen DeBoer as far as understanding how to run an offense. So, and Neyland's crazy, you know what I mean? Neyland's a wild, wild atmosphere, good fans, passionate fan base.
Yeah, in terms of roster, though, give me Alabama's over Tennessee and Oklahoma's by a lot right now. Now, and Georgia, we know that what the deal is.
Georgia's going to have a strong A to Z roster.
Yeah, and they're going to have a quarterback that apparently will drive over for the game in a new Lamborghini in Carson Beck. Big baller.
Anybody that shouldn't own a Lamborghini, I'd say it's me and Carson Beck.
Text Tider here in the mailbag, Tim. He needs a hug, it sounds like. He wants to know, why does 2023 still hurt? He's still hurting, our boy, Text Tider, from that end of the 2023 season. I get it, man. That was a tough one. It's a tough one.
Yeah, everything about it, you know, I mean, losing the way you lost and then losing Nick Saban, you know what I mean? But I don't know.
Come on, Text Tider.
I think it's turn the page time. I don't know how. Honestly, I'll tell you this. If you look at the round table, the BOL message board, the discussion, and I get there's some, you know, the regular animosity. I mean, I'm sorry, the anxiety, the people being anxious, the people being positive, the people being negative, and the trolls who really need a hug themselves. But I see the discussion, but usually this time of year, there's not this discussion. There's excitement. That's why there's so much discussion going on. I think you look for a fresh start, and this is it. You know, you knew it was coming. I feel like if there's anything positive, I feel like you're in better shape now than I thought you'd be after Nick Saban retired. I can say that with 1,000,000,000% certainty. I thought this would be a different – I thought we'd be in a different spot right now. I'm not worried about Ryan Grubb leaving. It doesn't matter one bit to me that Ryan Grubb left, because I felt it was always a short-term relationship. He was going to be up for – obviously he's well-respected. He was going to be up for coaching jobs consistently, and also for him to choose to stay at home in the NFL. It's not even like, you know, it's like having a long-distance relationship breakup. You know, he didn't, like, choose another college. He stayed in Seattle, you know, with the NFL, which we all know is an easier job. So that's what I would take from it. Also, you got a pretty good basketball team, a hell of a coach. You got a baseball team on the rise. Softball team, Travis is telling us, is really good. There's a lot going on right there.
Well, 2023, from a football perspective, it still hurts because that team won your heart, right?
Yeah. You wanted them to win.
They got down early, had the adversity, and then just week to week won an extra piece of your heart, Tex Tider, as the season moved along. And then to look at it in retrospect and know that was Nick Saban's last team, well, there's going to be some residual hangover, but it's time to – pity party's over, Tex Tider. Time to get that dauber up. All right. As Tim said, a lot of good things to look forward to. Nah here in the roundtable mailbag wants to know over under. I don't know if there's an over under when you're asking for just an outright prediction, but over under, we see Tom Allen, the former Indiana head coach, who of course Kalen DeBoer worked for in Bloomington and some of the other assistants as well. Tom Allen joins the staff in the next couple of years. My understanding, he's at Penn State right now, right? Working for James Franklin on the defensive side.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how that relationship is. I know I tell you what, Indiana, who's never had a run in my lifetime in football, was at its best when Tom Allen was there. Right. I mean, they had, you know, the strength program, and I know people go back to the night Baloo, and I was dead in the middle of it, how the reaction was and the, you know, oh my God, you know, again, we had people absolutely losing their mind about Baloo and staff coming in as the strength coach because they didn't know. This goes back to the same thing. You know, I think that an average fan, if he doesn't know, screams it sucks. You know, you know what I mean? But that run they had, Kalen DeBoer, look at some of the assistants they had, Tom Allen, a hell of a coach. Yeah, he's at Penn State now. I think he's the defensive coordinator, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know he's working with the linebackers. We've seen recruits mention him. But I think it's possible. But, I mean, right now you got the swarm, you know, Kane Womack, still been practicing his name, Womack. I'm gonna get that one right all year.
He's got some people out there that'll correct you on that pretty quick.
Yeah, I'm not listening to it.
I need some of those people. I mean, you ever heard people try to pronounce my last name? You ever been called Rear for most of your 55 years on this planet? You know,
it's not Rearer.
Man, I got the
look. I've man, you sling in three vowels and two consonants. You're asking for interpretation.
Yeah, I need some of those people that'll quickly correct.
I'm not one. I'm still calling Michael Penix, Michael Phoenix.
Yeah, you know.
I'm like, that's not spelled right. That's not on me.
You figure this out. You go there, and I cringe just for a second. I tighten up. Then you pull it out of there. You always say it.
I've got a lot of options with P-E-N-I-X. I could go a lot of.
You've saved it to this point. Beep. You've saved it.
I had to buzzer me every now and then. Can't say that,
Dark Star crashes here in the mailbag. Toughest opponent on Alabama's schedule next season. That one should be pretty easy, I would think. And he wants a 12-team playoff field, just an early list. Who do you got toughest opponent for Alabama in 2024, Tim?
Yeah, I've got Georgia with Tennessee being sneaky as well.
Ooh, I mean, Tennessee up there.
Yeah, I just think Tennessee, the Bama, I mean, that's always been a rivalry game. Saban made it not, but up until Saban, it was a big deal to go to Neyland, you know. Other than that, I feel pretty good about their schedule. There wouldn't be anybody really, you know, I don't know enough about Oklahoma. I don't think the talent's there. I don't think the same home field advantage is there that you've got in Knoxville. But Georgia, obviously, is the easy one. I mean, number one team in the country. Kirby Smart, you know, everything that program's done. You know, obviously, his connections to Alabama.
Gabe Lewis here in the roundtable mailbag. Where are you at on the three bucket strategy? I personally think the after tax bucket is a little overblown. Your thoughts? That's a financial sort of outlook or plan, Tim. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. I am not, which I understand that it entails like immediate, intermediate, and long-term financial planning. I'm not the person to ask on any three of those.
I can assure you, Gabe Lewis probably didn't know that answer.
No,
Gabe Lewis.
No.
I will tell you this, though. I believe in the Tim Bucket method, which is I slide my money into different. I have several. We have ten to a dozen bank accounts, and I slide every check's money into what we need. Braces for kids. when I had kids, I put $10, $15 in. I had four kids. I knew somebody's going to need braces, right? Knew they were going to need cars. So I just slide it in there. I'm assuming that's the bucket. I just put it in
a bucket. 8 to 10 bank accounts? What are you running, a cartel or something?
Well, we got four kids.
Based out of Medellin?
Hey, dude, we got to travel. We got a Tim okay. might have to move yeah. and leave everybody behind account. I got bailouts on bailouts, but yeah, we do the savings.
Bailouts.
Yeah, we do that. You know, we do the tax account. You know, I've got everything divided. It's at least 10 of them. So that's my buckets.
Boo AU here in the Roundtable Mailbag. What is the best hire that Kalen DeBoer has made to this point and why? Who do you like of his hires maybe most right now?
I don't know. I'll say the most interesting is Kane Womack. I like it. I want to see. I don't know if it's the best. I still think Jamarcus Shepherd is going to be a next level wide receiver coach. I watched a lot of YouTube videos and talked to a lot of people. A very quiet guy, but man, he knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing. I think he might be the best overall, but I think Womack is the most interesting. Because we saw the Saban defense for so many years. Even before that, we saw the basic SEC defenses, and now we've got the swarm. You know what I mean? We got cool names. We got Stinger, and we got all those names out there. And I'm curious to see. I mean, I think this is going to be exciting. Alabama fans want to attack, and players want to attack. They don't want to sit back and be patient. So I think he's the biggest one right now, probably to see what the defense can be. There's a lot of pressure. You know, everybody can say, you know, Kalen DeBoer's got, you know, big ones to take over for Saban. But, I mean, Kane Womack, you know, he's coming in and with a completely different system. Alabama was a defensive team, had some of the best defensive teams in college football history and certainly the most talent that we've seen in one era. So he's taken over. So he's certainly got some confidence in what he can do as well.
Yeah, in terms of guys that weren't bringovers from Washington, I like that combination of Mo Linguist and Colin Hitzler in the secondary. Those two guys working together. I think that could prove to been, if it in fact plays out that way, if they are sort of a co situation back there in the secondary, I like both those myself, especially when you are breaking in so much newness on the back end of this Alabama defense. Roll Tide, YNWA. Three questions, non-sports edition. Things happen in threes. First Saban, then Rick and Bubba. What happened to Rick and Bubba? Did I miss something? Please tell me.
They retired.
Did they? Please tell me T. Watts and TR don't have an announcement coming, do they? No, I think we're good for today, right, Tim?
Yeah, our only announcement is, hey, do us a favor, like and subscribe. Reach down and click that button. We are not going anywhere. Nobody wants us but each other. The only one that wants me is Travis. The only one, and this includes the wife and kids. The only one that wants Travis is me. But click down and like and subscribe for the BOL channel. We're not going anywhere. I'm not sure we know what to do. We're definitely not like Nick Saban. We can't walk on the beach and play golf all day like he is apparently going to do, and I didn't expect it.
I'm aging out pretty quickly at this point, but yeah, I mean, This is as much fun as I'm going to have. So his second question, what is JoJo's daily Red Bull regimen? Joseph Hastings, of course. Dude hits the ground running, Tim, at 100 miles per hour. I like JoJo's energy myself, but.
Yeah, he's a high energy guy. He's got youth on his side. He's got that. Joseph can be like that. You ever went through the mall parking lot and there was a chihuahua in a car? And you walk by and that chihuahua just comes at the glass like it's going to, it just got so much energy. That's Joseph when I wake up. Joseph is getting after it. He's a young guy. He's enthusiastic. He likes to chit chat. He does all the good things. He does all the good things work-wise. But, yeah, his energy level, I mean, he says dumb stuff like makes me want to never talk to him again. He's like, sorry, I was riding my bike. Like, he's riding his bike around, you know, just riding around. I'm like, why are you riding around? That's how you get ran over. But he definitely has youth on his side. Funny, you know, really good kid. He's funny. You know, we have a lot of fun with Joseph.
Love some JoJo.
I think he's got youth, not Red Bull. Red Bull's more.
Yeah, I don't think that's.
I think, I think Andrew Bull Bones starts with the Red Bull. Clint. I think Joseph's just going with straight youth.
I don't think it's supplement induced in any way. With
no PEDs for Joseph.
He's just running. The third one here, have visited 48 contiguous states with the family, still saving up for Alaska and Hawaii. What is the favorite vacation you guys have been on? Tim, your favorite vacation.
I mean, it's going to, you know, people kind of make fun of me, but I mean, we've been on, you know, we've been to Europe, we've been to Hawaii. I've never had, and they all are great. They're all A+, 5-star trips, but I've never had more fun than I do on the coast of Maine. I've did the trip twice. Travis did a version of it. Fly into Boston, grab a rental car, go up the coast.
You know,
there's the thing about it is you can stop in the same area on the way up, come back, stop in the same area again, but be in a different town with a different vibe. You've got the woods, you've got the beach, you know, you got the bushes compound up there, which I didn't even know. I found out Kennebunk because everybody kept saying, are you going to get W's autograph? I didn't know he lived there. I had like 10 people saying, you're going to get W's autograph, or if you meet W, take a picture. And I finally was like, what are y'all talking about? And they had this big house up there we went and saw, but they had everything. And then we cap it off in Boston with the game at Fenway, and, you know, in the summer in July, head home. That to me, I love them all, but that's just an easy trip to drive and chill. You know, you're in Europe, we're getting up and getting after it every day, which is great. But Maine's perfect for me.
Yeah, we did that one in October with the leaves too and everything. And the weather was still really good. Like you said, go into Boston, make the drive up into maybe Vermont, cut over New Hampshire, Connecticut, into Maine, all of that.
It's the just food. The thing about it is you get
unbelievable.
It's not nearly as crowded. If you went to California, you'd have a similar trip. You could go to the woods, which were fantastic, I've seen, and the beach and all that, but you're facing a lot more traffic. You don't hit that kind of traffic in Maine, even on the coast stuff. The food, the lobster rolls, anything lobster, anything.
Yep.
Anything. I mean, it's like, seriously, like it's even the drinks, the Maine root drinks they have are unbelievable. And it's easy and it's simple. I mean, you can get off in the rural area.
Just drive.
So, yeah, I could do that trip. We did it 2 years in a row. We got so many places we want to go, but we might do it again this year.
Mm-hmm. Bubba Mediocrates here in the Roundtable Mailbag. Will Ohio State become this year's version of Texas A&M, buying an entire recruiting/portal class? If so, do you think all the hired guns up there can bring a natty to Columbus? Well, I think that's obviously the command that is being placed on Ryan Day after losing 3 straight to Michigan. Bring in Chip Kelly as the offensive coordinator. First you had Bill O'Brien, then he moves on to Boston College as the head coach. You backfill with Chip Kelly. Chips are pushed in to the middle of the table for the Buckeyes, aren't they, Tim?
Yeah, I don't think the similar situations are even remotely similar, honestly. I mean, when Texas A&M, a lot of the guys that they signed, we knew they had red flags off the football field. And even we knew a lot of them were just straight up NIL issues early on. Like they were heavy NIL bargaining chips. There were some things to watch with. I mean, Ryan Day and them are getting good players. Caleb Downs is a great person. Seth McLaughlin is a great person. Julian Say, and none of those guys have issues. So they're getting the right. Now, the running back from Ole Miss, he's a guy that could rock the locker room a little bit with
Quinshon.
Yeah, because that apparently happened at Ole Miss. So they got a little bit of that, but I think the rule is in the locker room, you want to have the majority of good because they'll affect the bad and make what's the bad apple analogy?
Basically, all it takes is one.
Yeah, but I think in this situation, you think to overcome it with I have no analogy, actually. I just think that you hope that they control the locker room because you have the better kids. But for most of the people I'm aware they took of, the guys from Bama, they were all good people. I mean, Julian saying no issues. Caleb Downs, you know, great guy, hard worker. Seth McLaughlin, same thing. So they got the talented guys. Texas A&M had some red flags. And if you've looked at it after the fact, I mean, Evan Stewart, we told him early on when Evan Stewart hit the portal, Bama wasn't going to be a factor there. And other schools immediately kind of ducked out on Evan. You've seen Denver Harris. Did I read he's at UTSA now.
Yeah, now he's at UTSA. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so we had guys, and those were some of the guys that we were, you know, you were kind of worried and hoping they matured out of their situation. I don't see it as the same thing. Now, there's a bullseye. Ryan Day can't miss. He can't, and with him, it's win a national championship. I don't think making the championship game's enough. I don't think beating Michigan's enough. They have poured in a ton of resources. They've really circled the wagons. So a lot of pressure on him, but also an unbelievably talented team coming in.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, you're going to see Georgia, Ohio State in the 1-2 spots, I think, in the preseason pretty much. And then, you know, maybe get into Texas and Alabama and some other teams after that. Saban 23, as we wrap up the mailbag here, and as you said earlier, we really appreciate everyone taking the time to contribute. And also, we appreciate you subscribing to our YouTube channel here. If you haven't already, hit that subscription button, turn on those notifications. You'll get all of this video content as it drops right here on the YouTube home for BOL. Saban 23, I'd love to know what it's like on y'all's end rebuilding sources after a long-tenured coach like CNS retires. I know y'all can't say much, but I've always been fascinated by this stuff. Tim, I think it's always changing. Even if the head coach is somewhere for 15, 20 years, because of staff movement, whether it's support staff, on the field staff, whatever, that's just sort of, an evolving process, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Alabama lose what, 3 coaches a year? I mean, I wonder what the average is. It had to be close to 3, right? Every year, Bama lost close
to 2.5 to 3. Yeah.
Every year on an average. So, I mean, for me, it's just, you know, it helps being old. You know, I'm pretty good with people, you know, pretty good at my job, have a wide network, work with a great group of guys at On Three Off. I know y'all make fun of half of them on the other team sides, but we've got a strong, strong network of coworkers that we work with, you know, so. It's the same thing. You just get used to it. It's been 25 years, you know, providing value and all that good stuff.
Well, Tim, I think we've about covered it here on the latest.
Covered it all.
T-Watts and TR. Again, appreciate everyone taking part in the roundtable mailbag. Anything else, Tim, before we get out of here? I mean, we got Tiger Woods playing golf in a little bit. All right.
So. Yeah, he plays today.
Yeah, opening round. It's his tournament. He's the host. The,
See, that's
Genesis
me.
Invitational
that's me.
Out in L.A.
I'll do anything at my house or in my yard. That's what I'm Tiger Woods. But if I got to go to your place, I got to travel. I don't want to do it. But, yeah, I'll hold my invitational.
Well, he actually lives in South Florida and the tournament's in L.A., but his travel's a little bit different than ours.
He's not as smart as Tim Watts. He's not as smart if he did that. Yeah.
Well, there's Tiger Woods and then there's Tiger Watts.
That's what I'm saying. Give me 18 holes in the backyard and they can come here.
He also hosts an event. It's a silly season event, they call it, down in the Bahamas. So he gets that right, you know.
Yeah. I know he's
don't
exciting.
See Tiger That's in Minneapolis. Or
I mean,
Cleveland.
I don't know all the particulars with that, but I was surprised. I just figured Tiger was a Nike guy for life, just like Jordan. Jordan's not out.
Tiger's Tiger, and I'm surprised, given Tiger's dad and, you know, his stature. They must not have negotiated a deal like Mrs. Jordan did, because
I'm just saying, like, know, Michael Jordan is still
Mike's mom. She got that whole thing set up.
Yeah, that's a good. What's that movie called? It's got Matt Damon and them
in the air, something like that.
Something like that. That's a really good movie. For good people movie. Looking. Yeah, good. Yeah, that was a good. That was an excellent movie.
Did you? By the way, because now I'm thinking Ben Affleck.
Yes, I did. Damon. That's amazing.
Did
yeah.
you review the commercials? As you,
I did. I saw several of them. There's okay. several of them, like the. The one where they're throwing the ball in the back through the donut. That yeah. was a good one. Ben Affleck can't throw it. Matt Damon can. I saw the one with J-Lo. That was pretty out. It's good stuff. I sent it to the wife. She's dying laughing. They did a good – I read those – they sold those jumpsuits, and they sold out in a few hours. So they made some money. I mean, I just want to know what grown-ass person's walking around in life wearing that Duncan.
People love NASCAR gear, man. All kinds of people. And that's what that
is. Is that what that is?
That's what it looks like to me. It looks like NASCAR.
I'm just saying, if I go to Target later today and somebody comes rolling through the toilet paper aisle I'm going to have some thoughts in my mind about that person.
Yeah.
Unless it's Ben Affleck in a Target commercial, but I just like, you know, if it's a kid, I'll get it. But, you know, then again, I'm not a Jersey guy.
We need to do a podcast. Tim goes to Target. Just on that, we could do that, I think.
I have some thoughts that I'd like to share. I'm not
Tim's Target thoughts. And get them to sponsor it. We'll get them to sponsor the show.
I'm not sure in this day and age I could say everything I wanted to, because I'm going to be pretty honest about some people's attire. Of course, they're probably saying the same thing when I roll through in cargos, Nikes, and the hoodie.
Well, you know, that's your look. That's the look for you. All right, Tim. A lot of fun. Enjoyed it as usual.
See you next week.
Yep. And you need to hang out with us on the roundtable at BamaOnline.com. Tim, Andrew Bone, Joseph Hastings, Charlie Potter, Clint Lamb, Jimmy Stein, myself, all right there for you at BamaOnline.com. For Tim Watts, Travis Schreier, thanks again for joining us. Until next time, so long, everybody.